From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's tenure has been marked by an unusual proliferation of conspiracy theories entering into the mainstream, from Pizzagate to the Parkland shooting, the coronavirus, and now QAnon. This shouldn't surprise us, considering that Trump, is one of the most enthusiastic promoters of the conspiracy theory that Barack Obama was not a natural-born citizen. He arrived in the White House elevating the art of conspiracy mongering to a dangerous level. My guest is T. Krulos, a freelance journalist and author from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. His previous books, Heroes in the Night, Monster Hunters, and Apocalypse Any Day Now, explored the driving beliefs and lives of the people who choose to reject accepted reality and substitute their own. He now joins me to discuss his newest book. It's called American Madness, the story of the Phantom Patriot and how conspiracy theories hijacked American consciousness. Welcome to the program, T.
Thanks for having me.
So let's first start where your book begins, which is with this conspiracy that I hadn't really heard that much about, and it goes back in history, and that is really interesting gathering that you point out that famous people from all over the world had historically participated in, called the Bohemian Grove, and how you were approached by a man who decided that he had infiltrated this particular club. Tell me about this.
Sure. So the Bohemian Grove is a sort of retreat for some of the world's most powerful and wealthy men. It's run by the Bohemian Club, and they have an office in San Francisco. And the members have included several U.S. presidents, politicians, CEOs. They meet in this secret location in the Redwood Forest, and they pretty much party for 2 weeks in July. And it's always been sort of a part of conspiracy lore, because they do this rather bizarre ritual in front of a statue of an owl. So I was contacted way back in 2010 by a man named Richard McCaslin, and he told me that he had raided the Bohemian Grove in 2002, and he had a heavily armed standoff with police there and was arrested. And he had adopted this sort of conspiracy commando persona, the Phantom Patriot. So after he contacted me, he just became my guide through this strange conspiracy world that had all these unusual twists and turns. And then, you know, over the last few years, I noticed that this story was becoming very topical, as far as a lot of these ideas that he told me that would be considered to be quite fringe were gaining a lot of traction and being talked about.
So this is just one example of many that you cover in your book. And I'm wondering if you feel that this is an example of the ways in which people have glommed onto various conspiracies over the years, because there is a kernel of truth and then there's a whole lot of extrapolation, if you will.
Yes. And the Bohemian Grove is a good example of that. It is a real place. It exists, and it does have membership of some very powerful people. And they do this thing in front of the statue of the owl. So all of that is true, but conspiracy theorists have added a lot of details, like they're possibly sacrificing live people in front of this owl, maybe even children, and that, you know, there's sort of a sex slave dungeon in there, and all of these nefarious plots are being hatched. So a conspiracy theory a lot of times is this really an exaggeration of stuff that's true, and also kind of a way to sometimes attack people that you don't agree with.
One of the most enduring conspiracy theories has been around the shooting of John F. Kennedy, President John F. Kennedy. And this is another one that you tackle in your book. And I'm wondering how this particular incident that looms so large in the American consciousness really exemplifies the distrust of what politicians even today casually use and officials use this term, the deep state, right? That there's this shadowy force within American intelligence agencies that are controlling the rest of us. Again, a small kernel of truth hidden in there somewhere.
Well, yeah, the JFK assassination, I really think, is the birth of modern conspiracy theory. I mean, we've certainly had conspiracy theories going back to the dawn of time, I'm sure. But it really impacted people so deeply. I've talked to a lot of people from that generation who remember very vividly where they were when they got the news that JFK had been shot. And conspiracy theory really is a way that we sometimes cope with terrible things that happen, because we can't believe that this tragedy has happened. So we want to assign it a plot of these sinister characters who must be responsible for it. So, and in the case of the JFK, I mean, there was a lot of confusing things going on that day in Dallas. And there was a lot of parties who, you know, had a reason that they might want to kill him. So that really bred a lot of speculation of, was it the CIA? Was it Cuba? Was it some combination of different forces? You know, maybe LBJ was involved somehow. So that's really the origin of where a lot of this has gone.
And then, of course, most recently, or not most recently, I should say more recently, because there have been so many conspiracies since, is the 9/11 truth movement. And I'm wondering if this was one that had this unusual coming together of the fringe right and the fringe left. That, and I'm wondering if in your study of conspiracy theories and those who adopt them and believe in them, if there is any particular part of the political spectrum that they tend to fall on.
I found that conspiracy theories are used by the left and the right. You know, right now, the climate that we're in, I think it's leaning much more right with groups like QAnon. It's really blown up to almost be a secondary Republican party. Gotten so popular. But that's not to say that I've certainly seen examples of more liberal-minded people using conspiracy theories. Especially, it's really easy to believe something bad you hear about someone you don't like. So it kind of hits your gut reaction as being true.
So connecting those dots to see a pattern is a comforting way to make sense of the world. And in today's media landscape in particular, how have you seen the rise of social media feed these theories even more? You have a whole chapter in your book on Alex Jones, and the FCC-friendly version of that chapter is Alex Effing Jones. But what role has he and others like him played in the spreading of conspiracy theories in our modern era, where we have where people like Alex Jones don't have to rely on mainstream media outlets to reach millions of people?
Alex Jones was one thing that he had right was that he saw that the internet was going to be a big thing, and he was a little bit ahead of the curve on that. So InfoWars went online.
That's his website?
Yes. It went online very early. And he's been very successful in what he does. He's a millionaire. A lot of times when you see people peddling conspiracies, not the believers, but the people who are promoting them, it's because they have something to gain. So Alex Jones makes millions of dollars selling products on his website, like these kind of bunk dietary supplements. And in order to sell those, he needs people to give him web traffic. And to do that, he's found that an effective way to do it is to kind of yell and scream about crazy stuff and, blame everything bad going on in the world on people he doesn't like. But other people too. Trump knows the value of conspiracy theories. He uses him very much as a weapon against anyone that he doesn't like. And we're even seeing a story about QAnon. It looks likely that the guy who runs 8chan is a website, is possibly involved in creating some of this Q content. And he's also the treasurer of a super PAC called Disarm the Deep State, which funds QAnon-aligned candidates. And one of the places that the super PAC advertises on is 8chan. So it looks pretty much like this is a case of Peter robbing Paul. I mean, it's his own money that's circulating between these two sites.
I don't want to get in more to QAnon in more detail, because you do have a chapter in your book, even though your book, you know, you must have written it before QAnon became such a big force. You know, there's now a congressional candidate who is likely to win her seat, who identifies with the QAnon conspiracy movement. But staying on Trump and Alex Jones, what is the confluence between those two figures, and how have the two of them benefited one another, one gaining money and influence and the other one gaining political power and influence, while, you know, peddling these terribly destructive conspiracy theories?
Yes. So, I mean, and this is just really shocking that this happened, but shortly after he announced that he was going to be a candidate for president, one of the early media appearances he did was he went on the Alex Jones show on InfoWars. And he did that at the suggestion of one of his advisors at the time, Roger Stone, who was a frequent InfoWars guest. And Trump really recognized the value of that. You know, I don't think that it's just because of his support from Alex Jones that he won, but he realized he needed to build a sort of coalition of conspiracy theorists and racists and, you know, people who live in the suburbs that are afraid of the city. So Alex Jones has a very loyal following, and he knew that there was some value of getting on their side. So, and of course, Alex Jones has benefited from this, because he portrays himself as being this sort of fighter on the side that's the right side, Trump's side.
When conspiracy theories get debunked, why don't the peddlers of those theories also lose status? Alex Jones was one of the main promoters of the idea that the Parkland shooting, this horrific mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School in Florida, was a hoax. He was sued. He lost his suit. That should have been the end of his career.
Yes. So one thing I always say, it's so difficult to argue with people who are deep into conspiracy theory, because there's nothing you can really present to them that they won't brush off as being fake news or a hoax, or, you know, they're willing to give the benefit of the doubt to Alex Jones. They're like, oh, sure, he might be wrong once in a while, but so is the mainstream media. So they're just very loyal to these beliefs, and oftentimes to the people who got them hooked on these beliefs.
So the Pizzagate conspiracy was also one that was very seriously, was taken very seriously by millions of people, played a role in the 2016 election. Tell me about that conspiracy. And it seems to have some overlap with the QAnon theory, because it involves this idea that there are child sex traffickers among us.
Yeah, Pizzagate was really sort of the test run for QAnon. What happened was WikiLeaks released a lot of Hillary Clinton's emails that they had found, and people were studying those to find anything suspicious in them. So in those emails, they found that John Podesta, who was her chief of staff for the campaign, he was talking a lot about pizza, and especially his favorite restaurant, Comet Ping Pong, which is sort of a quirky pizzeria in Washington, D.C. Conspiracy theorists started to sort of branch together these different emails to paint this narrative that top-level Democrats were actually going to Comet Ping Pong and ordering a pizza. I'm doing some air quotes here. But in reality, they were ordering a child sex slave. And it just kind of snowballed into this network where other nearby businesses were accused of being part of this. And anytime anyone was talking about pizza, it was seen as suspicious. And it was very influential. A lot of people believe that Pizzagate is real, to the point where in 2016, this man named Edgar Welch, brought a gun. And this is very uncanny in its similarity to the story I tell about Richard Haslin. He raided this pizza place because he thought he would be doing the right thing, which is saving these child sex slaves in this pizzeria. And of course, he didn't find anything except for actual cheese pizzas, probably. And then these beliefs sort of evolve into QAnon, where there is this shadowy figure who says he's a government insider, and he has these cryptic messages about how Trump is secretly working on this plan to bust up Pizzagate and other similar ideas.
Okay, at the risk of insulting anybody in my audience, don't these people realize what idiots they sound like?
I think that they slowly adapt to this, where they might start small, just kind of entertaining conspiracy ideas, but it grows and it grows. And some people, a personality like Alex Jones can be very influential. He's seen by some people as being this sort of brave truth teller, a David versus Goliath. And his personality just appeals to some people, and they start believing incrementally sort of crazier and crazier stuff.
So is it also that they surround themselves with other believers? And so we've heard of these political bubbles that people live in. Usually liberals are accused of living in bubbles, and so we're unaware of what happens on the right wing. But aren't conspiracists also living in bubbles where they basically give each other the assurance that they're looking for, that they aren't crazy?
Yes. One of the wildest things that happened to me while working on the book was I went to a flat earth conference in Dallas. And I was
not
really
a joke.
Right. They were not joking around at all. And I was very curious about some of these things that you just mentioned. Like, how could someone possibly believe that the world is flat in this day and age? And I found it was very much sort of a social circle. They had kind of been interested in this weird idea, and they started to bond online, and they formed this group that's sort of like a support group for them.
It sounds like church.
Yes, exactly. Very similar. And QAnon, I would say, is very similar in a lot of ways to a cult. They have this sort of charismatic leader who's Q and or Trump, and they really suspend a lot of disbelief with all these ideas, and they form that sort of network and bond.
You've been covering these issues for many years. Did you ever think that these conspiracies would become so widely believed that they would enter the mainstream political landscape?
No. As you mentioned, when I started writing about QAnon, I thought that it was going to kind of lurk on the dark corners of the internet. So I was very surprised when I began seeing the reports early this year of several candidates running for office. And like we mentioned, Marjorie Greene in Georgia is pretty certainly going to be in the US House of Representatives. And that should be very concerning, because she's opening the door for potentially others who will follow. And it might not just be QAnon, it might be a flat earth party forms and stuff like that. So I did not expect it to take this direction, but 2020 has really been like the perfect brew of the pandemic and the 2020 election and civil unrest. It's all contributing to this sort of fear and anger about what's going on.
What is the relationship that you've found between many of these conspiracy theories and their belief in science? I mean, we know that the Trump administration is openly rejecting science. We see that with the coronavirus and its and the handling of coronavirus. And yet, there are times that I've noticed when, in order to appear credible, conspiracy theorists invoke some kind of scientific background. For example, anti-vaxxers will have the doctors that they rely on, that they'll say, well, that's a physician, or the 9/11 truthers have the engineers that they rely on. Do they have an approach that where they understand that science is important, but they only trust one or two so-called scientists because their theories match theirs?
Bad science, really bad science. And as you were mentioning, you know, Trump is leading a terrible example. I woke up and watched the news and saw that he was saying that climate change was a hoax, you know, in relation to all the terrible fires on the West Coast.
And that it's just going to start cooling, but no idea how.
Yes. So Trump says that he's got a brilliant scientific mind, but I haven't seen much evidence of that. So when you have leadership like that, it kind of trickles down, you know. And yeah, the chapter where I went to the Flat Earth Conference, I also talked about anti-vaxxers. And I'm sure I know that you have a scientific background. So it's just very frustrating to see people kind of wanting to take a step backward into the dark ages, where they believe that the world is flat and dinosaurs were a hoax. And all this stuff.
And of course, a lot of this, we think, has to do with looking for a way to make sense of a world that feels out of control, looking for community, you know, finding the sort of church-like atmosphere because you might feel isolated. But how, from all the years that you've spent studying this, meeting people who really buy this stuff, how does one combat it? Is there talking sense to a conspiracy theorist? Can one convert a conspiracy theorist back to reality, or do you have to sort of treat it like you treat cults and cult members, where you just feed them enough information based on reality and hope they snap out of it at some point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sad to say this, but I think a lot of people, when they get that deeply into conspiracy theory, it's hard for them to come back from that. In my book, I tell the story of Richard McCaslin, and he really wasn't able to step back.
This is the Phantom Patriot, the real-life superhero who said he blew up the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's because any argument you can present to them, they'll say is fake. So how can you argue with someone like that? I mean, you can try, and I think you should try to talk to people about their beliefs, and maybe point out that their sources aren't good ones, and try to understand maybe why they believe that. But it's very hard to talk them down. One thing that I think could possibly help is, I hope a lot of schools are looking into mandatory media literacy classes or programs, because there's so much misinformation and actual fake news out there that it's really hard to separate what a good source is from a bad source.
Right. People will, you know, well-educated people will pass around, so, you know, articles or media or website posts that look like news, but they don't bother to check what the news source is. They'll share memes without fact-checking whether those memes are based in reality. And sometimes, even if they are presented with articles or evidence from trusted sources, they will dismiss them as fake news. The journalist is a Democrat. I was recently told by a person on my Facebook page who I was trying to having an argument with about whether President Trump was unleashing white supremacy, and she did some digging around and decided the journalist was a Democrat, therefore everything he wrote was fake news. And fake. Then you just have to sort of give up. But we can't give up. This is now our democracy is at stake.
Yes, it's very frustrating and it can be overwhelming, and I see it daily. Things like you're talking about, memes and stuff that looks like it's legitimate news. And then you follow the link and you find out that it's just some far right website that has given them a name that sounds like it's kind of a newsy thing, but it's not.
And, you know, people on the left also succumb to this. I'll see memes with really outrageous quotes being attributed to Trump that when, you know, which it's easy to believe that because he says outrageous things every day. But then if you fact check them, it turns out that they were fake. And that, of course, undermines the credibility of those on the left as well. And it's important for people to understand that.
Yeah, I find that very frustrating because I'm like, hey, if you want to find some bad or dumb things that Trump has said, you can find those pretty easily. You don't need to make them up. You know, he says this stuff every day. So find something that he actually said.
Right. And just fact check everything. Well, T, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Give out your website where people can find out more about your work and also spell it for our audience.
Yes, my website is tkrulos.com, T-E-A-K-R-U-L-O-S. .com, and I have information about all my books on there. I also write a weekly column on the site called T's Weird Week.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you with the book.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been T. Krulos, a freelance journalist and author, and we've been discussing his newest book, American Madness, the story of the Phantom Patriot and how conspiracy theories hijacked American consciousness. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.